listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to mix things up a little bit on format today, or at least I think we are. I've got Seth Miller back from PaxX.Aero. He posted something a couple of days ago that we've been talking about for a while in the blogging community, and I wanted to have him on to talk about it in more detail because it really does interest me from a business standpoint, and it revolves around United Airlines' Polaris business product. And before I get too deep down the rabbit hole, I'll welcome Seth back for the second week in a row. Hey, Seth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for plugging in when you're on the road. So the part that's going to be different for you guys listening, or at least I think is going to be different, is I have a feeling, knowing that Seth and I are both passionate on this topic and both of us like to hear ourselves talk, that we'll likely go past the 5 or 6 minutes that we normally have for an opening segment. And so we'll just take a break at some point and come on back to talk about it a little bit more. And if for some reason neither of us is long-winded, then we'll end it there. But I doubt it.
We'll also have to call in, you know, trained professionals and various other people to understand what happened, because if we don't manage to keep talking like that, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, I agree. So just to lay it out for folks, and I'll try to give the short version here, but almost 2 years ago, United announced a new business class product called Polaris. It was going to be mostly focused on service and soft product enhancements in the beginning, because a seat rollout was going to take quite some time, as in 5 to 7 years, I think, to complete. And over the last, let's call it 7 or 8 months, they've started to trim back some of the soft product and service options. And Seth posted an internal memo that United published recently talking about some more rollbacks, if you will. And Seth, if you can just square up with the readers what it is that United business class customers are going to be losing here shortly.
Sure. And so there's a couple sort of bullet point changes coming to the product on board. And it's the way the rollout was, or the changes are being phrased, is our lounge, the Polaris lounge, is so fantastic and everybody really wants to relax more on board rather than be caught up in the like sort of fussy chaos of the meal service. And so they're going to scale back a little bit on the meal service on board overall. So one of the changes is for the pre-flight drinks. Currently, I guess by the time this comes out, it'll be the new service. It's because I think it changes. Maybe it's May 1st, not April 1st. But it's
soon. I think it is May 1st, yeah.
Yeah. But so like the current version is the flight attendant walks over and says, "Can I get you something to drink?" And you ask for whatever you want, and then they deliver it, or you know, what they have, they make something happen for you. The new version is going to be a tray with poured flutes, or you know, glasses of champagne or sparkling wine, orange juice and water, and you can pick one of those, or you can still ask for whatever you want. But my take on that is, by not telling, you know, by just putting a tray of stuff in front of you, 99% of the customers are going to order, take something from the tray or take nothing.
Right, and so the new version is pretty much what the old version was, which is to offer orange juice, champagne, sparkling wine, and water.
Yeah. See what else. If you're in Polaris First, you no longer get a soup, which is stupid in many ways. That was the only main difference in the meal, but such is life. There's changes to the –
They killed the Bloody Mary cart, right?
They killed the Bloody Mary cart, which I actually never saw. And they killed the wine tasting, and that was one of these things where like they had these special little trays that they loaded, and actually smaller wine glasses that they loaded, and you know, they had the wine list, and you could say, "Oh, I want to taste all of the red wines today, please." And they would set up a thing and pour you these, you know, 3 glasses of red wine and talk with you about what they were and yada yada yada, and you did a little wine tasting, and then they'd come back later and be like, "Would you like more of one of them?" And then you would actually get, you know, a big glass and get the wine you wanted poured. And I did have the opportunity to do the wine tasting on one flight once. So that was it was fine. It was not – I mean, here's the thing. It's still United Airlines, so none of the wines are spectacular.
Yeah, sure.
They're good. I mean, yeah. Listen, I like some of them. There's some wine I like and some I don't, and I'm not spectacular vinophile and like crazy about this stuff, but yeah, I like what I like and I don't like what I don't like. So it's good to be able to taste a few and see what it is. I usually know just based on the grape. what I'm going to like and what I'm not going to like. Because all the wines that they pick, like, if they pick a Zinfandel, it's going to be a decent Zinfandel. If it's going to be a Syrah, it's going to be a decent Syrah. It's not going to be the best. It's not going to be the worst. It's a, you know, it's a midline product, and they deliver on that. But being able to have that fun moment, and now you don't anymore.
Yeah, I thought they did a decent job with the wines. I'd say great if I were grading on a curve, but I liked the fact that it was a variety. I didn't find that the couple times I flew, I didn't fly the actual new seat. I flew the soft product, if you will, on the old seat. And you know, the thing I thought that was nice about it was you know, specifically if I was going to dine on that flight, being able to have a taste of three or four different wines, you know, I could figure out, you know, what I wanted to pair with my meal. And I'm a wine guy, so I like different things. And I thought it was – I think the overarching thing for me was it was a really nice service element. It was something different than what the airlines have been doing for the last, you know, decade that I've been flying business class. The same thing with Bloody Mary cart. I don't drink Bloody Marys, but it was a – you know, it was something different.
Yeah, and should we clarify what hard product versus soft product means for your listeners?
Good point. Hard product means they're putting new seats on planes, and those are going to be coming along in a very, very long time. There's a handful of planes flying around right now. Soft product and service. So soft product are blankets, pillows, mattress pads. And then as a general rule, I'll sometimes refer to soft product as food, you know, these wine flights, stuff like that. And so these are the things that the airlines – obviously they can't ground 100 planes and put new seats in them very quickly, but they can add a wine flight or chocolates to all the planes in very quick order.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understands what we're talking about. I get in trouble for that a lot on my podcast and on my blog as well. So, but yeah, you know, the soft product, everything other than the seat, essentially. And United made a huge push about the new Polaris product is all about sleep. It's all about getting you where you want to go comfortably. And in many ways, I understand and, you know, respect that. And I think that they should do everything they can to make the sleep part better. The first round, if you will, of cuts involved like removing one of the pillows and scaling back a little bit on some of the stuff. The second round now, or maybe this is the third, who knows at this point, but this latest round of cuts, in some ways, I actually think improves the chances of getting to sleep better. So in that sense, I vaguely support it. Right. You talked about like having the wine tasting and how you think it's a great service product and that element. And I absolutely agree with you from the service perspective for the one customer who asks for it. The problem I have is if I'm on a flight from Chicago or Newark to Europe, which is already too short.
Yeah.
And I want to sleep, but maybe I didn't have time to stop in the lounge on the way through, or I'm in, you know, there's only one lounge. It's only in Chicago. The others are way, way late in being open. So, and they'll, three or four of them are going to open this year, supposedly, and I think it'll happen. But, you know, United is making all these changes based on feedback we got from our passengers in the lounge. And, like, you're making all these changes based on a service that you can't yet deliver.
Well, and this is the problem. This is probably the biggest problem I have. I can't imagine in what is a nice lounge in Chicago, but albeit, you know, definitely crowded at times, that they got a bunch of feedback from customers saying, we think it'd be really great if you just got rid of all those new bells and whistles and let us sleep on the plane. I can't even imagine that's the abundance of feedback that they got as opposed to, this new lounge looks nice or any of the other stuff.
So what I would say is where it becomes interesting, and it's, you know, sort of the on these shorter, especially transatlantic flights, you get on board, you don't have that much time to sleep anyways, and if the guy in row two wants to do a wine tasting, the time it takes, you know, that extra, and it's not much time, it's 2 or 3 minutes to set that up and pour them and tell, you know, maybe it's 5 at the most, but it just doesn't take that much time. But that sort of throws off the flow of everything for the flight attendants. And as it is, it's like it's a crowded galley. It's everything is, you know, tightly timed and choreographed to work. And I say that with a bit of a grain of salt, because if you look at a United service operation, it never looks perfectly choreographed. But there is, you know, there's someone in the galley who's heating everything up and lining it up and getting ready. And if, you know, they have to wait an extra couple minutes, then, you know, are the pretzel rolls no longer, or the garlic bread's no longer warm, or just little things like that. And it slows down the process. If two or three people do the wine, and then someone else sees it, and so two or three people do the wine tasting, now that 2-hour meal service becomes 2.5 hours. And that really eating on a 7-hour flight, like, that's crazy. And so if you have people who are talking about, I just want to, like, grab a quick bite and fall asleep, this sort of thing really could have a potential negative impact on them. I'm not saying that's – I'm not at all using that as a reason to justify trashing the whole product. And I think, pulling it off the planes is not great. But I sort of can understand how it's challenging for the flight attendants. It's challenging for other passengers who just want to sleep. There are some negatives associated with it.
There are. I think part of it's exacerbated by the fact that most of the flight attendants don't like the express meal service because they feel like that upsets the flow. And I think that gets back to a lot of underlying, resentment here in terms of how the service goes. We could probably do a whole episode on that. I do want to talk a bit about, whether United made a mistake doing this or if it was worth trying out for the short period of time that they did. Let's step away for a quick second and throw in a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Today's episode is sponsored by GoGo In-Flight Internet. With their new blazing fast 2KU service being installed on over 2,000 aircraft, you'll have faster than ever internet speed on board. We've got some great prize packs to give away from GoGo. Stay tuned to the end of the episode to learn how to win. Get GoGo. Travel happier.
Okay, we're back, and Seth and I did manage to talk through the first segment, and shocking to almost no one, we're going to talk a little bit more about Polaris and whether it's going away. And Seth, I'm curious, I certainly have strong feelings on it, but I'm curious what your opinion is, given that we're less than 2 years in and knowing that some of the executive team in place now wasn't here at the time that Oscar Munoz, CEO, announced this. Do you think they made a mistake trying to roll this stuff out?
Yes, but I think they made a mistake in that they didn't do it. Right? I think they made a mistake in that they did not roll it out smoothly.
Yeah.
I think they never really got the product fully delivered. And so the mistake was, not actually having what you've been marketing readily and properly available to your passengers. And that created confusion, it created challenges, it created, frustration amongst passengers. Even little things like if you want the pajamas or the gel pillow or, there's one of the mattress pad, you have to ask, and they don't fully stock them. And I understand what I can, there's costs associated with carrying all that stuff, and I get it. But by not fully stocking, by making people ask, and then in January it was on the menu, it said please ask if you want this stuff. Since then it's disappeared from the menu, so not only is it not offered, but you have to actually know that it theoretically exists to ask for it. That's the way that things stop getting asked for, and then the company can say no one's using it anyways, we're cutting it.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I flew a non-Polaris – like a non-new seat Polaris plane shortly after the rollout.
We call that Folaris.
Folaris. Thank you. I think it was a 7.6. And I had all the soft product there, and then, a month, 45 days later, flew it again. And as you say, a bunch of the stuff that was there the first time wasn't there the second time, and it was to save space. It's like, you had to know ahead of time how much space this stuff was going to take. And you're either making a commitment to roll these products out and have them available, and you're going to say, this is why we are different. This is why we should command a fair premium. Or you're not. And they didn't do either of those. They did this sort of wishy-washy thing in the middle.
Yeah. And, I will say early on, one of the first times I saw the product, I did a media demo flight of it. I think it was a year ago, February.
Sounds about right.
They announced it. Anyway, it was a long time. It was like one of the first 777s that got delivered I was on. And it was – you walked on board and it was this pile of stuff. When they put the little bear that they were giving away for a little bit on top, the bear stuck up over the top of the seat. It was that tall a pile. And you're like, this is crazy. It's like all this stuff and there's no room for it. And I mean, there is. You throw stuff in the overhead bin, you put stuff on the ottoman, you tuck it away and it works. But I can understand maybe we don't need three pillows or whatever. Maybe we don't need all of it. But at the same time, things like, the pajamas do take up space in a closet somewhere in the galley. The meal stuff, United has struggled with galley space for meals and has since the merger. Like, that was one of the reasons that on, I think it was the 777s, the three cabin versus the two cabin, the two cabin had more galley space per person just because of the way they were laid out. And that was one of the reasons they had to change things like the cheese plate at the end of the meal. Which right. is stupid, but like one came pre-plated and one you got to pick and they would like assemble it for you. And just like little things like that, one takes up more space than the other. And it was all about galley space, but they test this stuff. They have the mock-ups, they have right. the demo galleys that they work with. So some of it I'm a little surprised by, some of it I'm not. But, you know, the other thing is like even the change that they're making, this May 1st rollout, one of the things which I didn't mention because I think it's stupid, but one of the things they're doing is a cart cover branded to show off the Polaris. And so basically what it is, it's a blue tablecloth that they're going to put on the cart that has the Polaris logo on it. And that's going to help, you know, reinforce the branding and in exchange for getting rid of the wine flights. So I think that's stupid. I understand I'm pretty bad at branding in some ways. I'm pretty good at it in other ways. But this one I don't get at all. But the part that really, really frustrates me with it, they're not actually going to have these cart covers ready on May 1st. They've announced this change to their flight attendants, which obviously leaked out to the rest of the world. And so now they've announced it to the world. And they don't even actually have the rollback ready to happen. And so my frustration is palpable. I think I'm getting a little excited, and I apologize. I'll try to tone it down, bring it back down to normal here. But, like, I get so frustrated with the company, and it's with any company, but United seems to find itself in this position more often than not. Like, just can't get out of its own way. Every time they try to make a little change, every time they sort of take a step forward, it's like, you know, take one step forward, take two steps back. And it's like, oh – you know, it's customers have asked us to stop doing the Bloody Mary carts. That's probably, I mean, depending on the question you asked, I'm sure there's a way to interpret that that's true. If you ask the question, would you like us to cut the Bloody Mary carts? I guess is the answer would probably have been no. But would you like us to speed up the meal service? Yes. Okay, well, that means no Bloody Mary carts. Well, that's not sort of what you asked us, but that's how surveys work.
Yeah. Surveys,
but
and I'm sure they can get to those answers. It's just I think, as you say, like we continue to see these things out of United where they seem to want to do something that differentiates themselves, and then they end up essentially not.
They do differentiate themselves, but they differentiate themselves by like shooting themselves in the foot
sure.
instead of delivering the product. And you know, the lounges again, like a year plus late on multiple lounges. And listen, I'll be the first to acknowledge that construction in airports is hard.
Sure.
But American built out their flagships.
And very large ones.
You can't tell me Miami is that much harder to build at than Chicago, or Chicago actually got done, but then Dulles or then Newark or San Francisco.
Well, yeah,
it's not that hard.
The Miami project for American was significant because it was an existing lounge. It was a ton of square footage. I mean, and it looks beautiful. I think it came together well.
JFK is the same thing. It was an existing lounge. They had to put a temporary facility in, and they were lucky that they had that sort of overpass walkway area to work with. But like, they got it done.
Yeah. No,
it isn't. Maybe eventually.
Yeah, eventually, I'm sure it will. And I guess, you know, let's say a year from now, there are three or four Polaris lounges open in the U.S. and the majority of the soft product enhancements that we've seen with Polaris are gone. You know, what do you think of it at that point? Was it a waste? If the Polaris name is out there, is that a benefit for them? I mean, what do they get out of, you know, pulling all this stuff back and ending back up almost at square one?
I don't think it's a waste. And I think that having a business class product that doesn't use the word business class is really useful for the company. As they're retiring first class, and even the new premium economy has the word premium in it, but not economy.
Right.
So they're changing some of the names, and this is that sort of cyclical, you know, big cyclical, decades long cycles of two class to three class to two class to three class, and occasionally a four class slips in there depending on the airline. And so from that perspective, it's good for the company. Virgin's upper class, Virgin Atlantic, you know, 25 years ago or whatever when that launched, was the epitome of this, where they used a business class product and competed with first class because it had the flat bed.
Right.
But they called it upper class. And yep. It didn't have either name in it. And United or Continental tried to do something similar with Business First.
Yep.
And was slightly less successful, also because they weren't flatbeds for a long time of that product. But, like, you know, there's reasons why I think overall it's good branding and good marketing. But, like you say, it's not going to be the premium product that it sort of was originally set out to be. And, you know, love them or hate them, United is never going to be a market leading carrier, and it's never going to have the best business class product flying. It's just not. It probably isn't even necessarily going to have the best business class flying of the three US carriers, although I would say of the three of them, there's pros and cons to all of them. And sure. You know, none is ever going to be too much ahead of or behind the others. And United was first to be all flat.
They were.
On all their seats. But, you know, American and Delta came on a little later and had the next generation. And so they had direct aisle access. And so, like, oh, God, I can't believe United is so far behind. OK, well, they're behind because they were ahead. And these seats are expensive and you have to amortize the cost over a long period of time.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like and maybe this is because there isn't another leapfrog generational change. But even if every plane, every long haul plane had the Polaris seat installed now, I don't think it's revolutionary change. It's arguably almost evolutionary, but it feels much more incremental.
It is incremental. It's basically going from a flatbed sort of cocoonish seat to a direct aisle access flatbed cocoonish seat. I think there's negatives to it. If you're flying with someone and like window seats, you're screwed.
Sure.
Or, you know, just tell them to sit somewhere else. but, you know, I'll come over and say hi later is, you know, how that conversation usually ends up. Because I want the window seat as much as I love you, my dear. I'm going to spend the whole trip with you for these couple hours. I kind of want to look out the window, too. No, it's, you know, that is an incremental change. It's a good incremental change. I think it's important. I think the seat is pretty good. Foz, who's, you know, a mutual friend of ours, isn't as keen on it. He's got some complaints about it being a little too narrow. And they do some weird things with, like, the sidewall against the aircraft fuselage that eats into space that could be used better. But, you know, square seats and round planes, and you get some challenges of geometry there. But, you know, the seat is fine. It is what it is. It hits on whatever sort of check boxes it needs to check, and that's fine. But it really comes down to me is United is going to be, you know, in the top quartile, but never in the top decile, right? They're going to be a 75% player, not a 90 or 95% player. And they just never are going to be in that top number, certainly on the hard product, because those last a long time and they're very expensive. And right. I honestly don't think they're trying that hard on the soft product. Even the Polaris stuff that they did roll out originally, like getting to pajamas was a nice touch and sort of a little bit of catch up. But they were only doing it on some planes and not offering it proactively. Like they weren't necessarily trying to get all the way there.
No, and I think it's
unlikely. It is what it is. Like, I think part of it is passengers have to set reasonable expectations for what they're buying.
Sure. No, I agree. Like, this isn't an Asian carrier. It isn't. You know, it's not supposed to be super high end. And I don't think. I don't say this pejoratively, even though a lot of folks refer to it that way. You know, Scott Kirby, who, you know, came over from American and U.S. Airways, America West before that, you know, is certainly a numbers guy. So, you know, if United isn't there now in terms of wanting to be aspirational, I certainly don't see it under new leadership. I think it's still going to be driven by dollars and cents. And to some degree, I'm fine with it being driven by dollars and cents. I think it's probably time to call a spade and say let's do the things we do well and, you know, run a good operation and get people there and charge a you know, whatever you're going to charge, as opposed to saying we are going to be aspirational but just not really
delivering on it.
Yeah,
well, and I agree. Like, and Kirby has focused a lot on the sort of D0 departure on time because that's critical to making planes land on time and all that stuff. I think focusing on A0 versus D0 is more important, but I understand where he's coming from, and that's sort of how you get there. But like, you know, there's a lot of good things that come from all that. But like you said, if you're not going to invest necessarily in spending a lot of money on product and being this aspirational fancy, for the reality is, especially for a lot of business travelers, the aspiration is get me there on time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And for those that you know, those aren't nerds like Seth and I, D0 and A0 is departure and A0 is arriving at scheduled time. And you know, gosh, I mean that's an entirely different rabbit hole for another day when I'll be happy to have Seth on again. For now,
I just want to point out that United at one point decided to change all of their corporate guarantees to be based on A0. If they were later, more often than American and Delta, they'd give credits to all their big corporate customers. And they decided to use A0 as opposed to A14, which is less than 15 minutes late, which the Department of Transportation somewhere along the way got the lobbyists from the airlines to say, well, if we were only 15 minutes late, that should count as on time.
Of course.
And yeah, because, you know, anyways, because if you're only 15 minutes late, they'll let you on board. Oh, wait. No, they won't.
Well, let's wrap it up anyways. There and put a bow on it, because God knows we could go all day long on this. I would love to have you back for D0, A0 at length. For now, I think we'll both say that we're still going to give Polaris an incomplete for a score, because we're not sure what it's going to look like in 6 or 9 months. I think we're pretty sure what it's going to look like, but I will be interested to see where we are a year from now. But for that, Seth, thanks again for taking some time to go deep on Polaris. You know, for those that are listening along, if you could leave a comment or shoot us a tweet or drop it on Facebook to let us know if you liked the longer segment or not. Don't use expletives if you didn't like it. But again, Seth, thanks so much for the time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. I had a lot of fun debating with Seth. I guess we weren't really debating, as it were. We were both on the same side of the issue. But now that we've gotten back on the rails, I've got Jen from Deals We Like here to do another big deal segment. Hey, Jen, welcome back.
Hi, Ed. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm hunting around the house for my winter jacket. My next trip ends me up somewhere pretty darn cold in the country. I figured I was done with those trips for the year. How about you? How are you doing?
I know. I understand. I'm hoping for spring soon.
Closer and closer. So what's on tap this week for us?
So today I wanted to talk a little bit more about the IHG credit card. It's definitely a hot topic in the miles and points world right now. There's been some changes.
You're not kidding. It's definitely been a hot topic.
I know. A hot topic. You'll see it all over every blog. Bloggers been writing about it. There's new credit cards added, existing credit cards, changes to existing credit cards, all relevant to IHG. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And even though there's changing, it's still a good value.
That's
the bottom line.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. So we're going to talk about credit card nights, right?
Absolutely. So right now, there's been the IHG credit card, and the current card has a $49 a year annual fee. That credit card has been giving you, or whoever applies, after 1 year, a free night that you can use at any IHG hotel. That means, you know, $100 hotel, or it could be a $500 hotel in Paris. It really didn't matter. There was no cap. There just had to be a free night award available for you to redeem it. It is an awesome, awesome, awesome way to get a free night free night in quotes for just $49.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, there's been a lot of first speculation on what was happening to the card. They pulled the credit card application link from the Chase site, and so there was a lot of speculation. What's going to happen? Is it still going to be around? Are we still going to get that free night? And then we found out that two new credit cards are being introduced, and the one of them is going to come with a higher annual fee of $89 a night, but it will still carry that free night. And we don't really know when that's happening and what's happening to the old credit card, if people will still be able to be grandfathered in, or if it will just be go by the wayside and they'll just automatically up you to that other credit card. So there's still a lot of, you know, unknowns there. But the real big change is that that free night that came along with a credit card is now going to be capped. So that's the problem. It used to be any hotel, any category. If it was a 70,000 point hotel or if it was a 10,000 point hotel, you could still use it. And what they're saying is that any free night that's awarded after May 1st of this year, 2018, will be capped at a 40,000 point hotel. So if it's more than 40,000 points, you will not be able to redeem your free night. And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a big change. And I think the important thing for listeners to understand is that the game – I say the game, but the you know, miles and points world is always changing. And I think the value of staying in touch with the right blogs and, you know, podcasts, as it were, since you're listening to us, is to understand when things change. And you know, using Jen's example here, whether it makes sense for you to continue to hold that ISG credit card or to switch to another one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a card I've had for quite some time. Actually, both my husband and I have it. We applied during the same time. So every single year, we haven't had just one free night, but two free nights. And we always typically have used it back to back. So we were able to get like a weekend for about $100, which was awesome. And then earlier this year, when they introduced Kimpton Hotels into the IHG brand and you could use those free nights at Kimpton's, it really made it even more valuable. But now with it being capped, I still think there's value. I mean, you're not going to get the same value, but as long as you have at least a $49 or more hotel, which most hotels these days are way above that. I mean, even if you use it, you know, a lot of times we fly out of Providence, which is not that close. Southwest flies out of there. So that's sometimes our go-to. And we'll stay the night before, keep our car at the hotel, and hotels there are at least $100 a night. So there's still value. You're still saving, you know, $50 for this free night. After the annual fee.
Yeah, and I think there's still a little bit of hope that Chase might grandfather in the old people. I have some Chase cards that are grandfathered into the old 5 points per dollar on office supplies for the Chase Inc. card. So I'll certainly cross my fingers. I don't have this card specifically, but I'll cross off my fingers for all the folks out there that have the $49 version and been enjoying that free night. Jen, thanks again for popping on. Can you let people know where they can track you down?
Absolutely. You can find me at dealswelike, .com, and feel free to email me at dealswelike@gmail.com or find me on Twitter at Twitter/dealswelike or pretty much everywhere on social media you'll be able to find by just searching the Deals We Like tag, and I'm happy to answer any questions. So thanks for listening.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll be right back to finish up this week's segment on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast to wrap up this week's segment. And I'll be honest, I had a different plan for this week, and I was away on spring break, and you know, things were a little crazy over the last couple of weeks. But this one story popped up a couple of times, and it was one of those, you know, sort of like nails on a chalkboard thing for me. And maybe it's just because I'm a family traveler, but it kept popping up from my great friend Summer, who writes the Mommy Points blog. And well, okay, before I get too deep into it, let me just intro Summer and then we'll get into what's driving me crazy this week. Hey, Summer, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ed. Can't wait to get you all riled up.
Too late. You did it with all those repeated tweets of mine the other day. All right. So a quick reset for the people that don't follow my rants on Twitter. The TSA has decided that raisins and peanuts are dangerous items. They want to inspect all of your snack items. And I got this from Summer. So, Summer, give folks a brief synopsis on what you've seen and heard so far.
Sure. So the first time I heard TSA screeners at the airport talking about pull out your snacks, it was about a month ago for our spring break. And we were going through a terminal that didn't have pre-check. So we were just in the normal massive line. And I thought they were crazy and they were talking about Jell-O or something. So I totally ignored it. And we were fine. We got through just fine. But then about 2 weeks ago, I was going through the Denver airport in the pre-check line and I heard the same thing. And I was flying solo, so I didn't really have a lot of snacks. So again, I ignored them and then started poking around online. And so this is a thing. It's not just me hitting two random bad luck airports, but the TSA is now asking you to take your snacks out and put them in the bins. But the kicker is they are insisting there is no new policy to take your snacks out. Just yesterday, I was flying home from the Wichita airport, and they actually have an example bin now as you go through TSA showing all of these snacks.
I saw that image. Oh, my God.
But yet they still insist that there is no new policy to remove food, although clearly there's something going on because lots and lots of people in lots of airports are now asking you to do this.
I just, you know, I mean, I guess, okay, maybe it's not a new policy, but maybe this files under that category of they're annoying. Well, okay, like, I mean, you don't have to, you know, go through the magnetometer, and you don't have to take your belt off when you go through that. But if you don't take your belt off, we're going to – yeah, exactly right. Yeah, we're going to – full cavity search. Step right over here. So I just wonder now if you're going to get a full cavity search because you didn't pull your, you know, cheesy peanut butter crackers out of your backpack.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know – this is true for all travelers, but especially family travelers. You do not need delays and secondary screenings at security. You need to be prepped and get through there. And so if they're going to want this to happen, you know, just be up front, right? It's crazy, but whatever. There's a lot of crazy at TSA. So just be up front, let people prepare, and call a spade, but they're in this really murky gray area with it, which is so strange. And something I hadn't thought of, but a mom who has a child with severe peanut allergies brought up, is, you know, they put their stuffed animals and computers and iPads and stuff in these same exact trays that people are now, I guess, being asked to put their peanuts and Snicker bars and Reese's Pieces in. And so this mom was like, there's a serious risk now of cross-contamination for my highly allergic kid, which I hadn't even thought of, but apparently is, I guess, a new real threat when going through the airport.
Well, I'm sure those bins are sanitized after every use, though, right?
Obviously.
I wonder if those bins are ever sanitized.
I think we know the answer.
I if I think back to, you know, back when we had young kids, you know, when we had baby age kids, and we were sort of at the bleeding edge of when pouches were the new food source. They were the new baby jar, if you will. And I think you were right around the same time.
Yes.
You know, I get that. That's a heavier substance. You know, it's probably not going to show up great on x-rays. But, I mean, we always had to bag that stuff separately anyway. And I can remember horror stories of, you know, them opening pouches and squirting stuff out to test it and all that. So, I mean, I get it for something like that. But I just – I can't even imagine, like, what is it about a bag of – like, and like this is a killer for folks that haven't seen the picture, and we will have a link to it in the show notes. I promise you, it might even be the feature image for the podcast at the rate we're going. But they've got like a little tiny sample, not sample size, but a little individual snack size bag of Snack Mix. So it's not even like, hey, this bag of Snack Mix is 5 pounds. It's so dense that we can't see to the middle to see if there's some sort of nefarious substance in the middle of the bag. No, you could literally pinch the bag, and the peanuts and the raisins would move out of the way, and you could tell there's nothing in the bag that's nefarious. It's peanuts and raisins.
Yeah. They have like peanuts and raisins. They have normal M&Ms. They have peanut butter crackers. They have, you know, regular crackers. They have just normal dense, or not dense, but just normal non-liquid snacks in this example tray that my toddler, P.S., tried to totally steal and walk off with. She did not realize how low quality their example snacks were. She wanted them.
Well, that's the thing. Like, let's just say M&Ms really are nefarious. Is pulling them out of the bag and putting them in the tray really going to help the X-ray see them better?
I don't know. X-ray. Guess I'm not smart enough to know that answer.
I will answer your retort with the same retort. I think you already know that answer.
It's very bizarre. But again, equally bizarre is that they don't just call it out. Like, let people prepare if you're going to be doing this. So I don't know. It's very strange. But a very, very strong new trend that we are seeing at airports all across the country.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that you'd seen it for quite a month. Like, I followed the first time I think I heard you talk about it was about 2 weeks ago. And so I've flown, gosh, in the past 2 weeks, you know, I've been on 3 or 4 planes, and I always have snacks in my bag because I'm infamous for never trusting the airlines to feed me. And so, there's Cheez-Its and cranberries and beef jerky and all sorts of healthy snacks like that that I normally avoid and then just eat the bag of like Cheez-Its and cookies instead. So there's plenty of stuff in my bag, and I nobody said a word to me about pulling it out. So yeah, your point about the consistency, that's what families crave when they go through security, isn't it? Just consistency.
Yeah, at the very least, be upfront and consistent. And I do think that pre-check lines are avoiding this more than the normal lines, just based on what I've been reading online. But there are definitely families that have gone through and had to rummage through every single corner of every single bag for snacks when they didn't know that they were going to have to do that. And I can just imagine what a nightmare that could be.
Gosh, I can only imagine. I mean, we let our kids pack their bags nowadays for trips, and I can only imagine, having to sort through, because the stuff that ends up, we peeked in Charlie's little backpack, and he had like an old-fashioned school bell in there. So gosh knows, it would be just as easy for him to have, a pack of crackers or something and me not know it. Now I got to like go through his entire backpack to make sure he's got the right snacks.
Yeah, people have had that sort of long disaster waits at TSA because they didn't know. And there's no way to know because TSA is not telling you. The only people who are ringing the bell right now on this are largely travel sites. And so that's just a very backwards way to spread information.
Yeah, it sure is. All right, well, let's put a bun on it there for now, unless I get more riled up and my blood pressure goes even higher. If we get more clarity on this, I definitely want to have you back so we can have some more fun with it. But these things really do frustrate the heck out of me. I'm sure they frustrate you as well.
Absolutely. There's just no reason to make it harder than it needs to be. And it's already hard enough, especially when you got little kids. So, yeah, it's a little nuts.
All right. Well, before we run away, tell people where they can find you when we're not ranting crazily about peanuts and raisins.
Well, you can watch me rant crazily with peanuts and raisins on Twitter. It's at mommy, M-O-M-M-Y, _points on Twitter. And the blog that we write pretty much every day is mommypoints.com. And so you'll find me both those places talking about all these important things like dangerous raisins.
There you have it, folks. Thanks again for Summer for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
And we're back to close out episode 7 of the Miles to Go podcast. We did a few things differently this episode. Seth and I spoke through the first two segments about United's changes to Polaris Business Class. And then we added in a family tip section at the end. Hope that you'll leave some feedback as to whether you like those things, if there are other things in the format that you'd like to see, any questions that we can help answer. But before we head right out the door, I just want to throw in my final two pennies. If you follow my blog, you probably saw a post I had a few days ago about our spring break vacation and how everything didn't turn out quite the way that we hoped it would. Our kids were a little grumpier than normal. There was a little bit more what we call the galloping greeting gimmies of wanting stuff. And in the end, it was a good trip. There were lots of memories made. And I think, as I look back on it and I lament, how it could have been better, I missed the obvious point that I was trying to make to my kids. And that's that we made a ton of memories in a week down in Orlando. And maybe they're not the memories that every family wants to make, but for us, they were great. There are things that I hope my kids will remember and things that I hope that they'll want to do with their kids. The underlying message here, my final two pennies tonight is even when the trips aren't great, they're still great. Showing our kids of the world does so much. It teaches them about other cultures. It teaches them patience. It teaches them so many things that they can't learn just in a classroom. And, I would encourage everybody to make sure that they're getting out there and exploring the world and exploring new horizons. It's even more important if you have kids to make sure you're showing them the world so that they know what else is out there, that they want to continue to explore, that they want to see everything. That's, I think, the most important takeaway that I could think of right now that I'm enjoying is just knowing that my kids continue to get to see the world. They get experiences that I never got when I was their age. that's a full wrap on episode 7. Like I said, we did some different things this episode. I hope you'll give us some feedback on what you liked and what you didn't like. You can find links to all the discussion topics and our guests on our website at milestogo.boardingarea.com. If you're enjoying listening to the podcast, I hope you'll help me make it grow. There's two things that you can do there. You can rate the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or SoundCloud or Stitcher or one of those places. You can also subscribe. Both of those things help push our podcast up the rating board and get more people to see it. And that's our goal. You still have time to enter our giveaway. GoGo Inflight Internet give me some awesome prize packs that we're giving away to listeners shortly. It's easy to enter. Go to milestogo.boardingarea.com/GoGo. You'll need to enter the secret phrase. This week's secret phrase is in flight, as in in-flight internet. GoGo's new 2KU service is super speedy, much faster than previous versions, great for business travelers. I'm super thankful to them for giving us some prizes to give away to guests and to you guys as listeners. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Until then, we've got miles to go.